Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host. Welcome to a brand new year, 2013, here at the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls and we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And having taken a day off over the New Year's holiday, there's just more news than I even know where to begin. I want to begin with a story that's a little bit dated because this happened in the outskirts of Buffalo, New York, a couple of weeks ago where a murderer laid in wait for these firemen, set fire to his community, and as the firemen came, he shot and killed two of them and injured several. I've got the story here from the Associated Press. I just wanted to point out that this sniper, this murderer in Webster, New York, who laid in wait for the firemen, had previously served 17 years in prison for manslaughter in the 1980 murder of his grandmother with a hammer. Manslaughter with a hammer. How does that happen? What did he claim he was doing a roofing job and grandma just happened into the path of the hammer? How do you get manslaughter for killing your grandmother with a hammer and then get released from prison? I'm outraged. I'm not saddened. I'm outraged. He killed himself, of course. So that's the state of justice in America. I guess we'll open 2013 with that. And as I said, I know the story is a little dated, especially here in Colorado, where we had another mass murder just yesterday. Just yesterday, a man in Aurora, Colorado murdered three people. And then I don't know if the police shot him or he shot himself. So that makes the Buffalo story a bit dated. The Webster, New York, I'm sorry. I don't want to tarnish Buffalo any more than it's already been tarnished. This was Webster suburb. Just outrageous. When are we going to be outraged, ladies and gentlemen, at these massacres and these murder-suicides? When are we going to stop lighting a candle in the wind and pick up our pitchforks and march on City Hall, for crying out loud? I'm tired of it. I can't take any more. So will the state of justice improve in 2013? Well, what do you think? Well, I think not. So I just wanted to open with that. And now let's go. Let's go to the Well, It Was Just a Matter of Time file, where we go across the pond to France. A story from the Telegraph in the United Kingdom. Every New Year's, the news media and the hospitals, they get together and they announce the first baby born at 12 o'clock and 5 seconds or whatever it is. Well, according to the Telegraph, the first baby born in France at approximately 1 minute past midnight on January 1st, 2013, was born in the central French town of Moulins and became the first recorded baby born in 2013. The parents, alleged parents, are named Maud and Delphine, and they're both girls. Yeah. So the first baby born in France has two mothers, according to the... Of course, we know that that's physically impossible. The baby has one mother and then one person who is masquerading as, I don't know what you'd call it, the father, the mother, the father, the mother. It's really bizarre. Maud and her partner, Delphine, says that the two deviants hope to get married as soon as it becomes legally possible to do so. And as you know, there's part of the successful Democratic campaign of François Hollande over there in France. Big part of his campaign was to legalize homosexual marriage. So I suppose that's just a matter of time as well. Opponents of the bill, the legislation, legalizing homosexual marriage there in France, they plan a big protest on January 13th. And that's encouraging that there's still people in France willing to organize and protest against legalizing sexual deviancy. You know, it's a shame. The justice system is turned on its head when doing something legal means doing something deviant and corrupt. That's why I teach my children, some things are illegal and some things are immoral. Don't do things that are immoral. Because all legality has become quite hazy and difficult to navigate. So there you go. There's your first baby born appropriately in the ew. Just disgusting way to start the year. It doesn't get any better from here, folks. The news is not encouraging. I'll tell you, over the holidays, I realized that I may have finally reached the point where I just can't stand commenting on the news of the day anymore. Because it seems to me I've said everything that needs to be said about every topic that needs to be covered. And it seems that all of my commentary is just so fairly obvious that you people already know what's going on. So this is starting to feel like an exercise in futility. And opening the newspaper, of course, which I don't do, but going online and looking at news has become repressive. It's become something I'm starting to not look forward to. And so perhaps the days of the worldview are numbered as I just lose the ability to absorb all this. Well, for example, we've just gone to France, depressing as that is. Now let's go to Washington, D.C. This is from usnews.com. The 113th Congress was sworn in, as you know, last week. And it included the first Hindu, the first Buddhist, and the first Buddhist there to be members of Congress. And also, for the first time, Congress is welcoming a member who describes her religion as none. Yeah, none. This is Representative Kyrsten Sinema, a Democrat from Arizona who was raised a Mormon. Now she says she's religiously unaffiliated and does not describe herself as an atheist. Sinema favors a secular approach to government, and she believes the term non-theist, atheist, or non-believer are not befitting of her life's work or her personal character. And she lists her religion as none. Another first, another milestone, as we topple headlong into 2013. By the way, Congressman Sinema, I hope I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. She is an attorney and a professor. So there's two strikes already. And I think she's bisexual. Three strikes and you're out. Well, I mean, you're in at Congress, but you're out in my economy. 10 other members of the new Congress declined to provide any indication of any religious leanings. And about 2% of the 113th Congress has not declared a religious affiliation, up from just 1% in the prior Congress. So the number of full-on, unashamed, unabashed heathens has gone up 100% in one Congress. At this rate, it'll double every year, and before you know it, the whole country will be taken over by secularists hostile to the living God and His Word, and, well, homeschoolers and Christians everywhere. So put on your seatbelts, ladies and gentlemen. They're coming for us. Yeah, you let the heathens take control, and they'll be kicking down our doors and trying to confiscate our children. Of course, unless a catastrophe happens, then they'll be begging for us to, please help us. Everybody calls on God and His people in times of trouble. But in times of relative contentment, they have a tendency to be quite hostile. And so a 100% increase in flaming heathens over there at the Congress this year does not bode well for the 113th Congress of 2013. Yeah, okay. Let's see here. I know everyone's been on the edge of their seat trying to find out if Hillary is okay. And apparently she's been released from the hospital. And she says, according to the Daily Mail, which is the only newspaper allowed to report on the fact that Hillary has yet to testify about the Benghazi affair, that you're not allowed to report on that here in the United States of America. We have to go overseas to get any reportage. And the Daily Mail reports that Hillary Clinton will testify in front of Congress about the terrorist attack on the American consulate in Benghazi, despite allegedly receiving a concussion and being hospitalized for an alleged blood clot. Now, I had to insert those allegedlies in there. Normally, they throw allegedly around like there's no tomorrow. But when it comes to Hillary Clinton, whatever she says, it's the gospel truth. Of course, she would never lie. Now, according to the Daily Mail, some conservatives in the United States initially claimed that Ms. Clinton was using the health issue to dodge testifying. Imagine those heartless conservatives thinking that Hillary would possibly lie to avoid embarrassing testimony. Conservatives are so heartless. Poor Hillary. Did you see her when she came out of the hospital? She looked like Yoko Ono's older, sicker, uglier sister. It was sad to see Hillary roll out of the hospital with the all black, and I don't know what that was all about. She's not going for any sympathy. No, she just wraps herself in a black sheet as she comes out of the hospital, wearing those big black bug-eye glasses. Looks like death warmed over. Now, the Washington Post reports that Clinton, quote, remains committed, unquote, to appearing in front of the congressional committees, though no date has been set. Yeah, okay. That, you know, that's like someone who tells you they're engaged, but they haven't yet set a date. So you just don't take them seriously. Yeah, you take it with a grain of salt. So, you know, engagement, when there's no date, okay, yeah, call me back. Call me when you're serious, Hill. Now, her physicians say that she suffered no stroke and no neurological damage, thankfully. I know we were all concerned here at the McBurney compound. I was checking my Twitter feed, checking the internet minute by minute to try to get an update on Hillary's condition. It was funny. We were at a New Year's Eve party, and I kept interrupting conversations and saying, wait a minute, Hillary is, it looks like she hasn't had a stroke. Oh, everybody breathed a sigh of relief. Looks like she's going to be released from the hospital. Has anyone gotten an update on Hillary? Is she going to be okay? Her physicians say she is expected to make a full recovery. Yeah, no kidding. She's expected to make a full recovery. They say that this alleged blood clot formed after she hit her head when she fainted following a bout with a stomach virus. Well, they forgot the dehydration excuse. Maybe they didn't get all their talking points before they issued this particular report. Okay, so not to put too fine a point on it, but here are my thoughts. Stomach virus, fake. Dehydration, fake. The slip and fall, fake. The bump on the head, fake. The blood clot, fake. And it would not surprise me if in the next few days or weeks prior to testifying, but after she's out of the State Department, Hillary Clinton fakes her own death. Perhaps she'll slip into a coma. Slip into a coma just prior to testimony. And we'll all be on the edge of our seats again, hoping that Hillary makes that full recovery. All right. Let's go to the politics file, because I made a bold prediction or a bold assertion a few weeks back. And, of course, it has been proven true, as so often happens. I've got a story from the New York Post about, remember the State Department officials who resigned as a result of the report on the Benghazi massacre of our ambassador, a couple of Navy SEALs, another government employee there. Well, according to the New York Post and Doug McBurney at the Weekly Worldview, the four officials supposedly out of jobs because of their blunders in the run-up to the deadly Benghazi terrorist attack remain on the State Department payroll and will be back to work soon. See, what did I tell? Now, I thought that they would be shuffled around and given some other patronage job other than the patronage job that they were filling at the time when they were getting drunk, having sex, and getting high while people were being massacred at Benghazi, but apparently they haven't even been fired from the patronage jobs that they hold right now. Now this story is dated because I took a week off. Has there been an update on these workers? Have any of them been found in Fort Marcy Park or anything like that? Not as far as we know. Okay, so as far as we know, they're still amongst us and actually still drawing a paycheck from us. According to the Post, Assistant Secretary of State Eric Boswell has not resigned from the government service. He's just switching desks. And the other three are simply on administrative leave and are expected to be back as soon as the smoke blows over. What, maybe that's not the right analogy. What is it? As soon as all this blows over, right, they'll all be back to work. The four, you'll remember, according to the Post, were made out to be sacrificial lambs. Well, it turns out nothing of the sort happened. Let's see. Spokeswoman Victoria Nuland said that Secretary of State Rod Ham Clinton had accepted Eric Boswell's decision to resign, effective immediately. What Nuland didn't say was that Boswell gave up only the presidential appointment as assistant secretary, but not his other patronage jobs that draw him six-figure incomes there at the federal government. The other officials, which their names are not that important, were found to have shown performance inadequacies, but not willful misconduct, so they will not face discipline, let alone having to resign or be fired. And so we're at a point in this country, ladies and gentlemen, where these governing officials, these members of the ruling class, can flaunt the truth right to our face, right in front of us. And they just laugh, draw their paychecks, and head on to vacation. And they just laugh at us. It's outrageous. But of course, you, as a member of the audience here at the Weekly Worldview, you knew all this was coming. All right. Now, let's get on to the bloodshed and massacres, amongst other things. You'll remember the hullabaloo that was caused on the left when the NRA came out and said, what we need is armed guards. Well, that's what we need in our schools. We can fix the problem. Let's put armed guards in the schools. And the lefties all went berserk. And they said, well, in fact, I think it was President Obama who said, I don't think the solution to guns in schools is adding more guns to our schools. I believe that's what he said. But out at Sandy Hook Elementary School, they've done just that. According to CNS News, when children from Sandy Hook Elementary returned to class last week, there were more guns than were present on the day of the massacre at Sandy Hook. Why? Because there are armed guards. That's right. Law enforcement officers are now guarding the new school. We all know that. So the hypocrisy of the left. See, I feel like that I'm just pointing out the blatantly obvious and that there's no point in even what I'm saying because it's also obviously ridiculous. I mean, do you people agree? Is it time to hunker down in the bunker and turn off the show and get my generator and start stocking up on automatic rifles and just forget about the show? Because this all seems so obvious. Well, anyway, I suppose that as a short-term, there is a short-term necessity for armed guards in our public schools. I suppose that is the case. Not to be a mouthpiece for the NRA, but I suppose that is a necessity at this point because so many parents have been brainwashed to go ahead and turn their kids over to the public schools. It's as if they have no choice in the matter. And if the government's going to force the people or brainwash the people or cajole and manipulate the people into sending their kids into these godless temples of degradation every day. I suppose the government, and that means us, has some obligation to protect them. And apparently armed guards are necessary. But, you know, I have a longer-term solution, and that involves bulldozers and the public schools. But it first, of course, would involve educating parents and teaching them that the government is not and should not be responsible for educating your children. And if you say that there's just no way that you can find a way to get your kids out of the public school, I think you're just not looking hard enough, because there is a way. It's not easy, but there is a way. But for now, I suppose we need to station the 1st Marine Division in the public schools. I guess that's where we are. And it's a sad state that we find ourselves in. But I'm with the pro-gunners. Yes, I'm a gun advocate. I believe everyone should have one and know how to shoot it. Well, I guess our kids have an armed guard in their school, at least most of the time. So I guess I should hope that the poor slobs sending their kids to the public schools would at least be able to avail themselves of the same type of services as the homeschool children there at the McBurney compound. All right. Now, speaking of gun control, let's go to the politics file. This is from Fox News, where we get most of our grist for the politics file.
From the guys.
From the guys at Fox News. My extremely attractive audio engineer has, she's taken to watching The Five, and she calls it The Five Guys. She alleges that there is only testosterone on that show, and there's a severe shortage of estrogen. The Five Guys. All right, but from the politics file, according to the FBI, annual crime statistics even, the number of murders committed annually with hammers and clubs outnumbers the number of murders committed with a rifle. Yeah, and see, now I feel like saying something so grotesquely obvious that I don't want to say it. Well, you don't hear the left calling for a ban on hammers or clubs. I feel like I'm Brian Kilmeade, and I'm just a completely vacuous idiot just reeling off fairly obvious commentary. Anyway, is there anything else from this story I can use? It appears, Dianne Feinstein and Joe Manchin, they're introducing a bill to ban rifles, specifically rifles that look scary. Flash suppressors, pistol grips, all of that, just scary, scary looking rifles. But apparently their efforts will be better directed banning hammers and clubs. In 2011, there were 323 murders committed with a rifle, but 496 committed with hammers and clubs. By the way, according to the FBI, nearly twice as many people are killed by hands and fists each year than are killed by murderers who use rifles. Well, you don't hear the left calling for a ban on hands and fists, do you? I just don't know if I can do this anymore. It's just outrageous. I mean, all right. Yeah, I guess you have to go there, because it's just all so... Maybe it's only obvious to me. You know, maybe there are people who tune in to Fox and Friends and actually find that they gain some knowledge and important information. People who watch The Five Guys and they're like, wow, I never thought of that. Those guys are smart. into the domestic tranquility file, and it's not a happy file, as it never is. According to the Weekly Standard, in 2012, 532 people were murdered in the city of Chicago. And you can bet that number is underinflated or underreported. Because number one, they don't count the innocent children murdered by abortionists there in Chicagoland. So they leave those out. And there's all kinds of unsolved things going on. You can bet that Rahm Emanuel is cooking the books as best he can out there in Chicago, so that people are less aware of the utter bloodbath occurring all around them. So 532 people this year. Last year, 441. So murder has increased in Chicago. I don't want to even go through these statistics. 2,670 people were shot. 1.5 people were murdered in Chicago each day last year. And over 7 people on average were shot every day in Chicago. And there has not been a declaration of war by Congress there in Chicago. So I'm not sure what's going on there. Perhaps the fact that the justice system has deteriorated to the fact where we to the point where we tolerate murder and mayhem and bloodshed and robbery and bludgeoning, that the criminals are simply brazen with no fear of justice. Could that be the case? I think that's the case. Now, the Chicago Police Department, don't lose all hope if you live in Chicago. Don't be packing up the plantation yet. The Chicago Police Department achieved a record drop in overall crime throughout the Chicagoland in 2012. So amongst the massive drop, a record drop in crime, well, there was the 532 people shot and the 2,600 and something odd people who were shot, 532 who were murdered. But overall, crime is down in Chicago and like that. So if you buy that, well, I could come up with another. I've got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you. All right. More from the Domestic Tranquility File. In the wake of the Newtown Massacre, and by the way, when did we just start calling these shootings, or what do they call them now? Yeah, shootings, and the people are called shooters. Everything has to be so vague and impersonal, and nothing is to assign blame or any judgment on anyone. For example, tune into the news last night. I find out that a standoff in Aurora left 4 people dead. So you're sitting there, you're thinking, a standoff left 4 people dead. Well, who is this Mr. Standoff, and what exactly did he do? Well, there is no Mr. Standoff, and a standoff didn't leave 4 people dead in Aurora. A maniac murdered 3 people and then was either killed by the police or shot himself in a hail of gunfire in a quiet neighborhood, a subdivision in Aurora, Colorado, where some good friends of mine live less than 5 blocks away, by the way. So a standoff didn't leave anyone dead. It was the maniac murderer who was killing people. But in the wake of all of these massacres, we're going to call the massacres, and we're going to call the shooters either murderers or killers or maniacs or dark, evil, scum, filth. Well, maybe we'll just keep it to a murderer. So we're going to try to change the lexicon here, at least here at the Weekly Worldview, and I hope you'll join us in that. But according to the Daily Mail, a Colombian company that makes stylish bulletproof clothing. I never thought those 3 words would be put together. Stylish bulletproof clothing. Well, they've launched a new line of child-size vests and backpacks. Yeah. In the wake of, now over at the Daily Mail, they call it a massacre at Newtown, Connecticut. So the garments are lightweight, and they look like normal clothing, but they're capable of stopping a bullet from a pistol or a submachine gun, which is what I look for when I'm out shopping for clothing. My dear, the next time you're online looking for new shirts, make sure that they look normal, but that they're capable of stopping a bullet from a pistol or a submachine gun. Back to the Daily Mail, some groups have advocated arming teachers and principals. Others, including the NRA, have said armed guards need to be placed at every school in the nation. But the head of this company says his bulletproof clothing, which costs several thousand dollars per shirt, per backpack, per vest, he says this could be one answer. He's a businessman from Bogota. And, you know, down there, they have the drug war going on, and this guy's got a booming business. But now he's looking north and he's saying, oh, we got nothing on those gringos. We're going to start selling them some shirts. Bulletproof shirts, yes, for the kiddies. So he's now going to be marketing. You're going to go online and you're going to see a banner ad pop up. Multi-layered, normal-looking clothing stops a bullet. This guy apparently demonstrates his clothing by shooting his employees at close range while they're wearing the clothing. A new marketing trend that's bound to become popular as the incidents of massacres, murders, rapes, beatings, bludgeonings, killings, stranglings escalate out of control. That's all we got from that story. So that's where we are, folks. So it's, you know, my pastor says it, all the people who are godless or secular, they're obsessed with making it so that people can't do things. You know, so you wrap your kid in Kevlar so that that a maniac can't kill them when they shoot them. But godly people with wisdom and a relationship with their creator know that the key to civilization is to make it so that criminals won't do it. And how do we do that? Well, we need to start putting the fear of God back into people. And that starts with executing every bastard on death row today. And then we've got plenty of ideas from there. Plenty of ideas on how to make it so people won't do it. Let's see. Let's go to the... I've got a story here from the science. Really? File. Apparently, scientists have been asked to study the DNA of the murderer at Newtown to see if he had an evil gene. The scientists are going to be searching for an evil gene in the maniac murderer from Newtown. Geneticists say they're looking at the killer's DNA to detect a mutation or an abnormality that could increase the risk of aggressive or violent behavior. And my guess is if they look hard enough, they'll probably find one or two or three. And you know what, folks? Chances are we've all got one. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. According to the Daily Mail, police so far have failed to find a motive for the killer's deadly rampage at Sandy Hook Elementary. He was known to spend hours in the basement of his home playing violent video games. Violent video games. Psychotropic drugs. A society that teaches children there is no God, that morals are relative, that you evolved from an animal, and that when you die, there is no judgment day, that God is a lie, that the Bible is a foolish book, and that you are the master of your own destiny, and you should follow your heart. I think you mash all that up, and you have a motive for the massacre at Sandy Hook. Now, speaking of violent video games, let's go to The Guardian overseas again. We get all our reports, everything relevant anyway, seems to be coming from outside the borders of the United States. And that's because the mainstream media is just awash in liberal hacks who just regurgitate their talking points. And Fox News is just a joke, a bunch of empty suits, mannequins. Somebody with their hands stuffed up their back controlling, making them say foolish things. So we go overseas. I said, speaking of violent video games, by the way. A Connecticut community is going to hold an amnesty of violent video games in the wake of the massacre. Organizers plan to offer gift certificates in exchange for donated games, which will then be burned. They're going to burn all these violent video games, and I'm all for it. I'm all for burning violent video games. Anything that contributes to godlessness, violence, and deviancy, whether it's a book, a video, a computer file, a video game, I think they should all be thrown into a pile and burned. And I see this not as a threat to free speech, but as a sign that some people are starting to make some sense of what's going on. Parents are saying, what have we been thinking, allowing our children to play games where they can shoot and kill not only the bad guys, but the good guys, or just anybody, innocent bystanders. Now, I myself have never been a gamer. I've got nothing against gamers. If you want to play video games, fine. Go ahead. I'm sure that it helps with hand-eye coordination and all that. But these disgusting, vile, sexually immoral, by the way, violent video games where people shoot and kill, I don't think it's healthy for young developing minds, that's all. And I think, again, that's fairly obvious. Do I even have to say this? Anyway, why would you say, McBurney? Do you think piling up things produced under the protection of the First Amendment's guarantee to free speech, why would you think burning them is a good thing? Isn't book burning bad? It's bad. Didn't Hitler burn books? It's bad. Well, let's go to a Bible verse in the book of Acts. Warning, 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 Will Robinson. There are Bible verses up ahead for those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity. We know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor and perhaps execute or imprison anyone who would ever dare consider even the possibility of quoting or even mentioning a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Let's go to Acts in the 19th chapter, and let me just paint a picture for you here. There was a group of Jewish exorcists who specialized in scamming people out of their money by performing bogus exorcisms back in the time of Jesus. Have you ever noticed that back in the time of Jesus, there was a lot of genuine, legitimate demon possession? And then, like today, it's all hocus pocus. There's no demon possession. But back then, there was a lot of going on. And if you want to find out why, well, you need to come down to Denver Bible Church, because our pastor has a great sermon on why it was that all this demonic activity was happening right around the time Jesus Christ was on earth performing his earthly ministry. Anyway, it was rampant and widespread, and needless to say, people were desperate when their family member was possessed to try to find help. So there was a bunch of Jewish exorcists who used to go around performing these bogus exorcisms, scamming people out of their money. And after they heard the story of Jesus, they started to cast demons out in the name of Jesus, or they started to add him to their repertoire. Well, what happened in Acts was they performed one of their sham exorcisms, and they mentioned the name of Jesus. And the demon said to these itinerant Jewish exorcists, they cast out the demon in the name of the Jesus whom Paul preaches, they said. And the evil spirit answered, and he said, Jesus I know and Paul I know, but who are you? And then the man in whom the evil spirit was leaped on them, overpowered them, and prevailed against them so that they fled out of that house naked and wounded. Yeah. Now this became known to both all the Jews and the Greeks who were dwelling in Ephesus, and fear fell on them all, and the name of the Lord Jesus Christ was magnified. So people suddenly realized that this Jesus who was being preached had an enormous amount of power. And that to trifle with his name was dangerous. And they started to realize that God was real and that Jesus Christ was his son and that he was powerful. Now this incident, according to the book of Acts in the 19th chapter, became known both to all the Jews and the Greeks dwelling in Ephesus, and fear fell on them all. And the name of the Lord Jesus was magnified, and many who had believed came confessing and telling all their sins and deeds. Also, many of those who had practiced magic brought their books together and burned them in the sight of all. And they counted up the value of the books, and the books were worth 50,000 pieces of silver. So burning books is not necessarily a bad thing. It depends on what book are you burning and why. So how did I get into Acts? Oh, yeah, they're going to burn the violent video games there in Connecticut, which tells me that I think that this particular event, like many to come and many in the past, is so shocking and horrifying that people are actually shaken out of their stupor, and they realize that they've been doing incredibly foolish things like feeding their children's minds with garbage and violence, and wickedness and bloodshed and sexual immorality. And that's always a good thing when those type of media are burned, preferably in public, along with a giant celebration of the fact that at least some of these parents are beginning to wake up. All right. So now let's go. We'll go to the justice file. Have you wondered why it is that Nidal Hassan, you remember Major Nidal Hassan who shouted Allahu Akbar and then started shooting and killing his fellow army soldiers there at Fort Hood? Have you wondered why he's not gone on trial? If you haven't wondered that, then you need to be wakened up out of your stupor, because everybody should be wondering about that once in a while. Well, apparently the judge on the case has been thrown out because, let's just read. Colonel Tara Anderson is replacing Colonel Gregory Gross as a judge and has said that although the Army requires Hassan to be clean-shaven, she would not challenge Hassan's decision to disobey the regulation. So that's why he hasn't gone on trial. The hapless judges and lawyers there in the Army haven't been able to figure out what to do about the fact that this guy won't shave. That's honest truth. They just have not been able to figure out what to do. Now, you'll remember that intelligence officials intercepted at least 18 emails between Hassan and the radical American-born cleric Anwar al-Awlaki. Hassan told al-Awlaki in one of the emails, "I can't wait to join you in paradise." He asked al-Awlaki whether it was appropriate to kill innocent people in a suicide attack, when jihad was acceptable, and how to transfer funds without attracting government notice. So the lawyers there in the Army and the prosecution has all this evidence against this terrorist, yet he still sits there, and they're arguing about his facial hair. Attorney General Eric Holder, according to WorldNet Daily, declined to press terrorism charges against Hassan. Instead, the government has labeled the shooting a case of workplace violence. Yeah. They won't call it terrorism. Survivors and their families are forced to watch while Hassan continues to receive a paycheck. He's still getting his major pay in the Army. He still gets a paycheck and medical benefits from the military. It's been 3 years, and Nidal Hassan has not been court-martialed for the massacre at Fort Hood. Hassan's next court appearance is expected sometime in January, but a start date for the court-martial still has not been set. Why? Because in America, we've lost our minds, and we're a bunch of blithering idiots. Even the military has been thoroughly corrupted and infected by the idea that we just can't judge and we don't know right from wrong and we have to follow the rules and the regulations. And to convict one innocent man, we have to just be careful. And after all, Major Hassan, if you watch media reports, they still call him the alleged gunman. The alleged gunman there at Fort Hood. And let's delve deeper into this problem, ladies and gentlemen, from the justice file. This headline grabbed my attention. States are slowly killing capital punishment. That's right. Dateline Denver from the Washington Times. The death penalty, already on the decline, could face its own demise at the hands of several state legislatures in 2013. Lawmakers in Colorado, Maryland, and New Hampshire are expected to make a push for pulling the plug on capital punishment in the next legislative session. I've got a quote here from Richard Dieter, executive director of DPIC, the Death Penalty Information Center. He's at the forefront of putting an end to capital punishment. He says, "Capital punishment is becoming marginalized and meaningless in most of the country. In 2012, fewer states have the death penalty, fewer carried out executions, and the death sentence and executions were clustered in a number of smaller states." Yeah. Let's see. Despite the decline in the number of executions, WorldNet Daily reports, polls consistently show that voters support the idea of capital punishment. Well, see there? The people support it. We all know that the great American people, great Americans all over, they support capital punishment. So by golly, there should be capital punishment because the people want it. Who cares what the polls say? I don't care what the polls say. What's right? That's what matters. And what would be right would be to bring Major Nadal Hassan into his next court appearance and hand him a straight razor and give him a suggestion as to what to do with it. And if he doesn't quite understand, we should show him. Putting it so succinctly, because the hammer is going to fall down, ladies and gentlemen. It certainly is. The Washington Times also reports that, the reason the death penalty is on the wane is because it takes a lot of time and resources. Yeah, it's a lot of time and money to execute these people. Connecticut abolished the death penalty 8 months before a killer entered the schoolhouse in Newtown, Connecticut. Now, he killed himself, but the state narrowly missed the dilemma of what punishment to mete out had the perpetrator survived. So had this maniac not killed himself, what would Connecticut do? Oh, by the way, they also report any law against the death penalty enacted next year in Colorado, by the way, the liberals and the homos and the deviants and the perverts who run the legislature out here, they've all come out and said, yes, we are going to abolish the death penalty in Colorado. So there's going to be a full court press, and any law against the death penalty presumably would apply to the maniac accused of murdering 12 people and wounding 50 in July at an Aurora movie theater. You all remember that? Do we remember that? So the obvious solution is kill that bastard before they pass any law banning the death penalty. Of course, that's not going to happen because we've lost our collective minds. We don't know what's going on anymore. All right, let's go over to Ireland from the personhood file. This is a story I've been trying to gather information to have all the facts, but it's difficult to get all the facts, but I have some good facts on it. The Irish government, according to the LA Times, announced last week that it would draft new laws and regulations to spell out when doctors can murder children. Terminate a pregnancy. After an ailing woman was refused an abortion and perished. You've heard the story, I'm sure, of the poor mother. And indeed, I mean that. The poor mother who was faced with a horrible medical condition. And her baby died and she died. Well, James Burke, he's a member of the Termination for Medical Reasons Ireland campaign. He says that we can see our government will be taking this issue seriously, which, see, in Ireland, it's virtually impossible to get an abortion legally. And Planned Parenthood International has been working hard to legalize abortion there. And now they've got this group, Termination for Medical Reasons. I happened to catch Lila Rose on, what's that guy's name? He was the former governor of Arkansas. He ballooned up, and then he slimmed down, and he ballooned back.
Huckabee.
I saw Lila Rose on Huckabee, and she did a great job. Let me get you the facts, or at least the alleged facts from the LA Times. Debate over abortion rules exploded last month after the death of Savita Halappanavar, whose husband told the Irish Times that doctors would not allow an abortion even after his sickened wife was told her baby would not survive. Halapanavar miscarried days later and died soon afterward. Her death is under investigation, by the way. Now, abortion is already supposed to be legal in Ireland when the life of the mother is in danger. Decades ago, that was ruled legal in Ireland. But Irish officials have never set forward clear regulations and guidelines for doctors, according to the LA Times, on when to butcher a child. Critics say that that the lack of directives makes physicians reluctant to abort, even when the mother's life is at risk. Hearings will be held next month before a bill is drafted to legalize child killing in Ireland. I wonder if medical professionals will be allowed to testify that there is never, never an instant where it's necessary to kill the baby to save the mother. I know sometimes it's necessary to remove the baby. That could very well be true. But it's never necessary to affirmatively kill the baby. And that's what the people at Termination for Medical Reasons, no doubt funded by Planned Parenthood International and other pro-abortion arms of the United Nations, that's what they're all about. They want to legalize the butchering and killing of innocent people. I've got a report from Yahoo News from Washington, D.C. Let's see. Ignoring both the hospital records of the Halapanavar case and the findings of medical experts, the Irish government has announced that despite promises to the contrary, they will force abortion legislation early in 2013. After the worldwide hysteria based on the tragic death of the young mother, the reporter who broke the story has now admitted that according to hospital records, it appears that Halapanavar had not requested nor been denied an abortion. In fact, one of India's most well-respected gynecologists, Dr. Hema Divakar, was quoted by the Hindu newspaper saying, quote, based on the information in the media, in that situation of septicemia, that's the medical condition, in that situation of septicemia, if the doctors had meddled with the live baby, Savita would have died 2 days earlier. That's according to a medical professional. But when there's mass hysteria to legalize killing people, there's no time to stop and listen to medical professionals. Previously, a medical symposium held in Ireland published the Dublin Declaration, finding that there is not a single case in which it is medically necessary to have an abortion to save the mother's life. It's just a flat-out lie, ladies and gentlemen. Similar to the lies that they're pumping into your kids' heads at the public schools. There is no God, there is no judgment day, you evolve from slime, we're just like animals. The strong survive, survival of the fittest, all of that. These are all related. You know, just because we're bigger and stronger than children in the womb does not give us the right to kill them because they are inconvenient or embarrassing. I'm sorry. And medical professionals who are honest will tell you that it's never necessary to kill a child to save anyone's life. And Lila Rose made that point so well on Huckabee, where she reminded us that this case in Ireland is very similar to the case of Jane Roe here in the United States, where a rape was created and a hysteria was invented, and America marched headlong into nationalized legalization of the murder of innocent people. And why? Not for medical purposes, but because wicked people who hate God are bloodthirsty, and they want to exercise their power over the weak and the defenseless. And as we move forward toward a more godless and secular society, the weak and the innocent amongst us, especially the weak, are in danger because the enemy is a bloodthirsty killer and a murderer and a liar from the beginning. And it will be his will that is unleashed upon people as the hand of God, the protective hand of God, is forced off the nation. Forget God taking his hand away. The nation is throwing off the hand, the protective hand of God. And what you're going to get is the mouth of the devourer who walks up and down on the face of the earth, devouring who he may. I guess that's all I want to say about that. How do I transition from that story? That's a very serious story, folks. So the personhood battle is pitched, and it is currently the epicenter is Ireland, where there is a full court press to legalize the murder of innocent people. And there is just a remnant, a small remnant of sane people standing in the breach, begging for the lives of the weak and the voiceless. And we need to stand with them, ladies and gentlemen. We need to pray with them, and you need to support them both financially and get up on your feet and do something to move forward the idea in the collective consciousness of what's left of Western civilization, that we cannot tolerate the murder of innocent people. That's the very first thing we cannot tolerate. The second thing we cannot tolerate is sexual immorality. But I don't want to preach a sermon here. I'll move on to Ann Coulter. There's nothing that can stop someone from preaching a sermon faster than the mention of Ann Coulter's name. This vile, despicable woman. Listen to what she did this week. In light of the newspaper that published the names and addresses of concealed carry permit holders in upstate New York, Coulter got into the argument. And here's what she said. "Why can't we get a record of women who've had abortions?" Coulter asks. "They get money from Planned Parenthood. They get money from Medicare and Medicaid. Much of these are tax subsidies. I think mothers would want to know what other women on their street might be willing to murder a child," unquote. Ann Coulter said that. Now, on its face, the conservatives are cheering. Ann Coulter is brilliant. Oh, she made such a brilliant point. Ladies and gentlemen, Ann Coulter is a charlatan and an opportunist who's willing to use the issue of child killing to make a political point. She's also willing to tolerate a certain amount of child killing just for that purpose. She's not unlike the Republican establishment. Publicly, they love to make points against child killing. But in private, what do they do to end it? Well, they don't do anything to end it because it has become part and parcel of their political charade. They raise money off it. They win elections by it. Ann Coulter is called brilliant because she brings up the issue, but what will she do to end it? And will she stand up and say there's never an instance where it should be legal to murder an innocent person, no matter how small or how defenseless they are? No, she will not. Child killing is just a political football to her. It's just an issue. She likes to make catty points against liberals with the issue. But what has she done to end it? Nothing. She's a liar. Here's what she says. She then, according to the Huffington Post, Coulter then likened gun control advocates to hysterical women who refuse to go after criminals. While Ann Coulter herself refuses to stand with those of us who are still sane and say we must stop the murder of innocent people. We must stop the murder of innocent children. You don't want your children slaughtered in the schools? Stop slaughtering them in the womb. But Ann Coulter makes a very catty and witty political point. And that's why I find her disgusting and revolting. Now, Piers Morgan, on the other hand, we all know where Piers coming from, right? We know Piers Morgan. Ann Coulter's got the right bamboozled, like she's some kind of conservative, because you people are idiots. The whole country is overrun with morons, idiots, people sleepwalking. Now, Piers Morgan, on the other hand, we know where he is. He wants to amend the Bible. Piers Morgan, according to CNS News, contends it's time for an amendment to the Bible. He told evangelical pastor Rick Warren that due to changing cultural views on gay marriage, the Bible, too, must be changed. Yeah. He explained that passages that state that adultery is punishable by death proves that the Bible is flawed. Really, Piers? Have you noticed how many people are murdered because of adultery? And all the Bible says is that adultery leads to death. And then you see it every day, every single day in America. Piers could do a story on someone murdered because of adultery. And yet he says the Bible is flawed because the Bible says that adultery is punishable by death. And all around, Piers, people are being slaughtered over the issue. Well, the Bible's flawed. Yeah, so simple.
simply doesn't make any sense. We need to amend the Bible. The Bible and the Constitution were well-intentioned, well-intentioned, but they are basically inherently flawed. Hence the need to amend it. My point to you about gay rights, Mr. Pastor, my point to you about gay rights, for example, it's time for an amendment to the Bible. Well, thankfully, Rick Warren said, no, there is not a chance of that happening. Rick Warren says that the people amend things, but the Bible's never been amended, and it never shall be. So, hey, Rick Warren, you got to give Rick Warren credit where credit is due. Rick Warren said, opinion changes, but the truth doesn't. And Piers Morgan said, well, we're going to agree to disagree on that, chap. Well, only for a short time, Piers. We're only going to agree to disagree about that for a very short time, Piers, because one day it will be proven to you as you are driven to your knees and your tongue confesses that Jesus Christ is Lord. Piers says, he says to Rick Warren, Why, Pastor, do you have such a problem with a man who quite naturally falls in love with another man? Why, Pastor, why? Rick Warren had a great comeback. Rick Warren says, the Bible says you can love anybody. The Bible says you just can't have sex with everybody. Pierce absolutely didn't know what to say. Anyway. So that's Piers Morgan. We know where he's coming from, though. He's just fine grist for...
Are you doing a longer show?
Longer show? Am I doing a longer show? Well, a little bit. I still have a little bit of time, I think. Let's see here. Well, I got three quick things here, and then it'll all be over, folks. I know, you've been bearing with me. I'm barely making it through this myself. I can't take it. Anyway, quickly. This is from the Telegraph in London. A new study warns that Christians suffer greater hostility across the world than any other religious group. The most common threat to Christians abroad is militant Islam, as you can well imagine, claiming that oppression in Muslim countries is often ignored because fear that Muslim oppression will be seen as racism. Christianity is almost extinct in the Middle East. You can almost count the number of Christians in the Middle East on one hand. And Christians are targeted, according to this new study, more than any other body of believers on the planet. Also, let's see here. This is from Fox DC, local Fox affiliate. Dateline Jerusalem from the Associated Press. The Palestinian Statistic Bureau estimates that Arabs will outnumber Jews in the Holy Land by the end of the decade. Yep, based on current birth rates, the two populations will be equal in 2016, and in 2020, Arabs will outnumber Jews by a few hundred thousand people. All these progressive, liberal, emancipated Jewish women have stopped having children. Meanwhile, the oppressed Muslim women keep having children because while the Muslims may be retrograde, backwards pagans, they still know the value of having children. All right, finally, can you help me with this name, my dear? Jiroemon Kimura. He was born in 1897, and he's been called the world's oldest man right now in Kyoto. Now, there's some debate over whether or not he is, but the headline says, Japanese man to become oldest living man ever on record. Ever. So this is just another example, ladies and gentlemen, of how the mass media is teaching people, and your children especially, that the Bible is a fictitious, silly fairy tale and that God isn't real. And what that leads to is the idea that if you get mad at someone, you can kill them because there is no God. There is no judgment day. You evolved from slime. You're just an animal. Sexual immorality, disease, misery, suicide, death, it all stems from right here, this headline. Because if you go to Genesis, in the fifth chapter, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll go, and we'll read about Methuselah. Have you ever heard of Methuselah? It says Methuselah lived 187 years, and then he begat Lamech. And Methuselah lived 782 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Methuselah were 969 years, and then he died. So ladies and gentlemen, the headline says this Japanese fellow is the oldest living man ever on record. And I beg to differ, because I've got a record here, the Holy Bible, that's never been amended. And it says Methuselah lived 969 years. And I teach my children that this is true. And I'll leave the debates about the guy in Kyoto versus the guy in Tokyo. I'll leave that to the heathens. All right, that's it. All right, we've made it through. As painfully as it was, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you hanging on through it. We may do it again next week. We may call the whole thing off and just start putting sandbags around the compound. But Lord willing and should he tarry, I'll be back with you next week. I want to thank my friends at KGOV, Personage USA, American Right to Life, Denver Bible Church, and as always, my other brother Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Maybe I'll be back with you next week. Until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.